Hello and welcome to the CFO Playbook podcast. My name's David McClelland. I'm a journalist and broadcaster. I cover business, technology and leadership. And right here on the CFO Playbook, I get under the skin of how world-class finance leaders from across various industries leverage technology, set goals, make plans, manage teams and much, much more. And in today's episode, we're talking about the realities of financial leadership in an innovative British consumer tech company experiencing rapid growth.
And this is product-led. This is a view or a mantra that if the product is good and high quality and people love it, the rest will follow. And having founders, you can't create that. You can't make that compassion by just being a serial CEO wanting to do well for the business and the share price. You have a complete passion for making the product as good as it could be. And I think that makes a lot of decision making easier in some respect, because that's clear. If the product can get better all the time, then we're all aligned.
A reminder that CFO Playbook is here every month with exclusive interviews and insights from world-class finance leaders. So if you haven't already, do subscribe. Have a listen back through our extensive back catalogue, and don't be afraid to get in touch, as many of you do. Your suggestions really do help to shape our shows. Right, let's meet today's guest.
This episode of the CFO Playbook is brought to you by Soldo. Trusted by over 25,000 organisations across 31 countries, Soldo combines pre-programmed cards, an intuitive app, and a powerful management platform to replace manual processes with efficiency and control. To find out more or to book a demo, visit soldo.com.
Ben Averis, CFO at Yotto. Great to have you here on the CFO Playbook.
Hi, David. Thank you very much for inviting me on the podcast.
Now, where are you joining us from? And, what's your day look like so far?
Yeah, I'm joining you from Cheltenham, so west of the UK, which is home for me. And it's been a pretty hectic start. It's the first day of school holidays for us. So I have three boys who are beyond excited to get stuck into their summer holidays.
Wow. Wow. Yes, as a fellow parent, I know that a challenge that it can certainly bring. And in these days of more and more working from home, while that's a blessing in many ways, it does also, during school holidays in particular, present some challenges. But you work in a company that has a lot to do with children and childhood and helping to shape their experiences. We'll come on to that in a moment, because today I want to chat about Yotto, your company, and about some of the other challenges that you manage as a CFO of a consumer tech scale up. It'd be great to touch on some of the specifics for you around raising capital, resource allocation, financial discipline, about the different hats that you need to wear in your role. Is that all okay? Sounds like a good plan?
Yeah, it sounds like a good conversation.
Brilliant. Right. So first off, let's learn more about Yotto and its story. In a nutshell, what does Yotto do?
Yeah, so hopefully some of the listeners will know Yotto. We've been around for 4 or 5 Christmases now and had a lot of success. Yotto is an amazing product for kids. It's very simple in that through listening and the very best audio, we're trying to help kids learn independently. It's all about putting kids in control. And those familiar with the product will know it's a speaker with a physical card that you put in. There's one actually just behind me. And that will just play for kids, whether they want to listen to music, stories, educational content, even some interactive games that we've started to release, keeping them away from screens, which is the most important part.
So you mentioned it's a speaker into which you place a card, a cartridge. How do you describe that?
That's right. It's simply a credit card size.
Okay.
Card which slots in, and then the player recognizes whether that's Winnie the Pooh or an Enid Blyton track or a Beatles song, and it will play.
Oh, right. So you've got a broad catalogue there, but you mentioned it. It's keeping kids away from screens. So there's no screen in this device, deliberately so. Really interesting. As a parent, what's been your relationship with your product in the time that you've worked there?
Yeah, it's been a product which my kids have grown up with. I think when I started at Yotto 4 years ago, my eldest was 3, 4 years old. and was using Yoto a bit, but as they've got older, they've started to use it more and more. So it's a great bedtime tool. They use it a lot to go to sleep. They use it a lot in the car. We've just seen some friends in the other side of the UK, and we had them all in the back with their headphones on, listening to various tracks and songs, which keeps them busy. So yeah, it's a great product. Three boys, all of which are pretty tough user testers.
You mentioned how many Christmases Yoto has been operational for, at least selling product for. What can you tell us then about the scale of Yoto, the markets in which it operates, and any metrics that give us an idea as to where you're at right now and how you're scaling at the moment?
Yeah, so I mentioned Christmas because we are a seasonal business. We have a product that is hopefully always at the top of the Christmas list. So we have that challenge, and I think we'll talk about supply chain and things later. But at the moment, Yoto operates in 5 countries, the US being our biggest market, where over 60% of our sales come from. But we started in the UK. We sell in France and Canada. And we've also opened in Australia, which was the most recent market, but it's going really well. All of them are English speaking predominantly, with the exception of France. So we have been leveraging lots of English speaking content. And that's led to fast growth. In our 5th year, we have millions of families now listening to Yoto, some of them having multiple devices in the family, which is something. And you mentioned their KPIs or metrics. We have our North Star metric, which is weekly active families. So a big focus that we look at is how engaged are our families, how good is the product at keeping the kids and the parents using it. So we set ourselves quite a high bar. It's if you've used the player for 5 minutes in the week. And that doesn't seem like much, but when you drill down into that, some of these are small music tracks, small chapters of books. And if we have a large number of our families using it every week, we feel that's it's becoming a bit of a habit, a bit of a habitual use. So if it's breakfast, using it when you're making the porridge and the kids are listening to Yoto daily, these are all really good leading indicators for us. And the success and revenue in my world will follow.
What's the backstory to the product here? Because I understand one of the founders is still there as a CEO. So where did Yoto come from? And I'm curious where the name Yoto itself comes from as well.
There isn't a really interesting story around Yoto. We've asked the founders a number of times. They got to the name because it works. And it was to do with kids being able to pronounce it. There are two founders, so Ben and Philip, Ben CEO and Philip CTO. They started the business after a history in music streaming, so that they were in the music industry previously. And they had kids after they finished that previous company, and there was no good way for children to listen to audio. You could repurpose a Bluetooth speaker, you could use your iPhone or your iPad, but that was suboptimal in their opinion. And I think Ben would tell the story when shopping for a stroller or a buggy for his youngest, the sales rep was saying how good this buggy was because it had an iPad holder for the baby. And he thought that there's got to be a better way. You can't be putting a display in front of a child at that age. So they set out to make Yoto and use their music experience and a lot of connections in the industry to start the product.
And as a CFO working alongside the two founders there as CTO and CEO, how's that as a relationship? Is it different in your experience to working in organizations in senior roles where it's not the founders, you know, where they've got a different relationship with the product perhaps than if they have founded it to if they haven't been the founders?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it there, the relationship to the product. I've worked in lots of similar roles in a professional capacity, in as much as I've been doing the strategic finance roles, and the CEOs or the shareholders are all finance background. They're all maybe in more of a sales-led culture. This is very different. This is product-led. This is a view or a mantra that if the product is good and high quality and people love it, the rest will follow. And having founders, you can't create that. You can't make that compassion by just being a serial CEO wanting to do well for the business and the share price. You have a complete passion for making the product as good as it could be. And I think that makes a lot of decision making easier in some respect, because that's clear. If the product can get better all the time, then we're all aligned.
And of course, I mean, one would love to expect that in whatever roles we're working in, we're all fully engaged and fully behind the product or the company. But given how close you are to the two founders of the company and then you coming in as CFO, does that mean that, maybe this is a double-edged question to ask, but does that mean that you also have a different relationship with the product, with the company, as a reflection of seeing how closely they are also close to their product as well?
Yeah, I would say it's quite infectious, actually. So you start to hear how passionate they are, and they're passionate down to the sort of coding level in some discussions. What that means is when I approach things, it's never from just a finance silo. I think context is the most important thing you can have in business. If you read around the subject, if you hear from more people, it all gives you context to make better decisions. And as a result, their passion rubs off on me, and I want to know all the reasons why we're pushing for investment over here or trying to sign off a budget there, because it's not just because they want more money or they want to do it differently. It's because there's always a customer reason actually at the end of it. And that makes that decision making a lot easier. Someone's just asking to double their budget. That's not helpful context. And often it can be quite negative from a finance perspective, as we're not going to do that. But if someone explains it's to do X, Y, and Z, and the customer experience is going to increase 3, 4, 5-fold, I know the economics that flow from a customer that loves the product, unit economics, recurring revenue, all the things that I'm responsible for will come.
And does that in turn then mean that you are closer to your customer, closer to the users, because you are also a user yourself, of course, and that's not exclusive to Yotto. I'm sure CFOs in many companies are also using or engaging with their product or service one way or another. But because of that relationship with the founders, you feel a sense of immediacy to your users, to your customers?
Yeah, I'd say that's absolutely right. And then at the same time, I guess, just to sort of temper what I'm saying, is I have to be quite conscious of that sort of being too much of a fan, right? So shareholders would not respect me in my role if I was just kind of saying yes to everything that we wanted to do. There's normal constraints within business. So I have to make sure I, approach things objectively. And I think that's where data, I would say, listening to a lot of your other podcasts, data's this thread that flows through a lot of them with CFOs. And I feel that's, as much as you can talk around the subject and say this is going to be great for the customer, you can actually validate that with user testing and data. And then again, that takes the subjectivity out of things and it gets to alignment much faster. So yeah, I temper loving a product and wanting it to be excellent with all the, the good rigor that I think finance and finance with a data lens can bring.
Yeah, both are important, to have that passion, but then, like you say, to be able to temper that with actual data. And you've mentioned already about the kind of metrics that you get back in terms of weekly active users there. That sounds like it's a healthy balance. Listen, I want to come on to more about Yotto and your approach to finance and operational strategy and all that good stuff in a moment. But let's just quickly back up and talk a bit about your background, Ben. What's been your journey in finance so far that's led you to your Yotto journey?
Yeah, so I started way back at PwC in audit, and then I moved into M&A, so helping predominantly consumer transactions get away. And that was 7 or 8 years at PwC until I made the move into industry. And that was quite a considered decision, because my family have run businesses at various stages, and I just, that passion for understanding more about the business than just the transaction in M&A led me to move across. So I moved to a consumer business, which was a kind of a Home Depot garden center business owned by Terra Firma. Clear 3-5 year plan, this is what we need to do with it. Then I moved on to Audley Travel, which was private equity backed by 3i, and was there for 5 years doing a similar strategic finance role, trying to work out how you chart the success of the business, what's working well, what needs to change over the 5 years that can lead to an investment moment or a divestment. And that's how I moved through my career.
You were Audley during the pandemic, I think, as well, which must have been an interesting time, particularly in the travel industry.
Yes. Absolutely. So I was if ever I'm speaking in these contexts, when people say, what was the moment that you've learned the most? And I think being in a travel company as COVID hit was absolutely the biggest, I don't know, probably plenty of anxiety, plenty of concerns, but biggest learning moment, because you go from, you know, one to zero very quickly and have to really work on the fundamentals and the basics. And by that, I would just point it as cash flow. Like, it's that simple. There's no one traveling. There is no holidays being booked. And you have to just manage for cash. And you don't really learn that in your professional exams. You know, you theoretically learn it in a textbook. But until you start doing those models and actually realizing what they're critical for, you learn lots. So I look back fondly, as odd as that sounds, of what I learned during that time. Obviously, at the time, it was brutal for everyone in all positions and personal life. But that was a really interesting time. I learned loads for the job now at Yoto.
So what was it then about Yoto that appealed to you enough to make that jump across from the different industries, from professional practice to retail to travel, and then over to a relatively early stage-ish startup scale-up company in Yoto? Why that left at the traffic lights?
Yeah, so certainly, you know, the ambition of wanting to move to the next role, which, you know, would have been, I want to be a CFO, the number one seat. But it's quite hard, that transition. Someone's got to sort of give you a shot. It's not like you just do your time and then someone offers you a CFO. You know, most of the time they're recruiting for CFOs. So if you're not a CFO, you're not going to get the gig. That was obviously one of the big opportunities, was to get my first seat as CFO and the shareholders and Ben giving me a shot. And 4 years later, you know, it's going well. I think also the quality of the investors. So they range. Paul McCartney is a shareholder. He's not on the board. We've had some really big venture capital, really high quality venture capital investment through the time at Yoto, and that really excites you to work with those people and that network. And lastly, I mean, we've talked about the product, but Ben as well. Like, Ben's been through lots of businesses through his career and clearly knows what it takes to grow a business from nothing to something. And I think that's a really important part when you move roles, is the people that you're going to be working with.
It's the same as with an investor. You're looking at obviously the product, the service, whatever, but also at the founder and the leadership team already there. And the same as when you're looking to potentially join that company as well. Are these people going to be a safe cradle for me to nurture my own career and to grow, as well as support the business? So yeah, that sounds great. Let's come on to your role a bit more at Yoto. And I guess in many, many early stage scale-up businesses, I don't know how you describe yourselves, by the way, but people take on multiple roles. I've been there myself. Is that the case for where you're at the moment with Yoto too? Are you a CFO plus, for want of a better phrase?
So I'd term Yoto in sort of scale-up phase now, through the startup phase, product market fit now, you know, growing. We're just over 200 people now, so scaling up. The CFO plus, yes, you certainly join and you've got lots of roles to be responsible for, and a lot of them are from nothing, right? So I was the first into finance and then recruited 2 and 3, and I think we're up to 7 now in finance. But I'm also, I look after operations, systems operations, and supply chain. So that means I'm working very closely with the manufacturing and supply chain teams. I visit China, Thailand, Vietnam. I've been to most recently this year. I also work with the operations director, so on all the fulfillment. So once an order's placed, it's got to get to the final customer. So I have a broad remit, although some of that isn't from my training, but it's something that I feel I can add value and mentor some very capable people within the organization.
And as you mentioned, having an interest in business as a whole, obviously finance is a core part of that, but understanding the entire business, the opportunity that you have not only to be the CFO, but to also understand the whole operational stage as well, and, you know, visiting China and understanding the supply chain as well. That sounds like a great opportunity. That's a pro, How do you reflect on the different pros and cons of wearing all of those different hats as a CFO, though? Are there any challenges? I mean, it sounds like a lot of work, as again, working in a startup, scale up always is.
It's certainly a lot of work, and wearing all the hats is important and quite a hard thing to context switch. But actually, to the point around business and context, as I said at the start, it actually gives you the breadth to make good decisions. So by knowing what's happening over there and over there is finance, you know, you make quite broad decisions that impact probably every part of the business in every decision you make. It gives you that context. So that's a positive. I think negative stuff is just the, how can I be everywhere at once? You know, I've got a lot of people that will report to me. I want to give them time and my undivided attention. And sometimes something's happening over here, I can spend less time over here. So I have to just be quite mindful with my time so that I'm putting enough of, I guess, my resource to each one of the areas that I'm responsible for. I also think another challenge of it is being available to nurture those teams. So making sure they're developing. You know, I don't want to do all this myself. I can't do this myself. I want to make sure the teams are all learning all the time. So making sure I can give them my time outside of the day job. I'm sure they're very capable of doing the supply chain piece, but how can they develop up to the next stage to do more? That's something I'm quite passionate about and is a bit of a challenge when I'm looking after so many things.
And that is an investment in time that will yield rewards, returns later on as your team is able to step up and as your role will grow. As Yoto continues to scale, you need to nurture that support. Otherwise, you're going to be creating more of a headache for yourself further down the line. How much of your role then is focused also on the other part, which is the fundraising piece? Is that something that you are deeply in the trenches with?
We have some debt products that we use, which have been really great from some of the banks that have supported us. And on the equity side, I'd say Ben probably takes the lead on the equity side, and I support very closely behind him with numbers, et cetera. And then on the debt side, I'll be leading on all of that fundraising. So yes, it takes up a lot of time. I think so much of it is relationship driven, because if I'm talking to our supporters, our finance providers regularly, you can have really quick, fast, agile conversations asking, are there ways to support our growth here and there, any products that are relevant? So I think you can get past spending a lot of time on it by little and often is kind of an approach, checking in regularly, keeping them abreast of what's happening in the business. And then that leads to a good relationship, but also when you need them the most, they're there and willing to help.
Which counters with the, it's our annual investor update or quarterly update or something, that more constant dialogue. What are the kind of things that they are wanting to know from you? Is it reassurances? Is it changes of direction? Is it, I mean, I guess it's a competitive space in which you're working as well. So what are the kind of investor supporter chats that you regularly have?
Yeah. So, you know, we check in probably monthly with all our investors or banking partners. A big one on our shareholder side is the vision of how scalable can Yoto be. So we want to be agile and move fast, but we want to make sure that we're never building a company that can't be 10 times the size it is today. So a lot of the questions are strategic from them. You know, how's the investment in this part of the organization going? How's the systems investment? Because we're very aware that systems will make us more scalable. We don't necessarily just want to hire many more people. We want to use systems in places. So being able to answer their questions on that regularly, that tends to be a large topic, is how we're going to be scalable. The banks are a bit different. The banks want to know the fundamentals. They want to know how performance is going versus their expectations. And then we lean on them for external knowledge. So how are you seeing the consumer businesses with the tariffs that we're still going through? Is how does that affect your other partners? And I think really good banks are those that share that information. They say, yes, we've got other portfolio companies that are seeing softness or strong. And when you start to share that builds that relationship as well, because you're more willing to talk about how Yoto's going, and that, you know, that's bigger than the sum of the parts, in my opinion.
It's a really interesting space, the hardware space in which you're operating, when software has been eating hardware, some would say, for a little while, and AI is eating software, to be going to market with a physical product. It's a challenging space. And you mentioned tariffs there. We mentioned some of the supply chain challenges that have been over the last 4 or 5 years in which Yotto has been operational. How do you begin to project forward 12, 24, 36 months, not only in terms of the figures, but in terms of the product direction itself, when there is so much uncertainty? What kind of pressure does that put you under when you're having those conversations as a CFO?
Yeah, you're forecasting, and I've sort of grown up through FP&A, so the financial planning and analysis side, and it's the crystal ball, show me the assumptions that will happen, tell me what's certain. And I believe, I don't know, maybe you look back retrospectively and think, oh, it never used to be like this, but just the volatility part of the formula that you look at every day seems to be growing. There's always something that's moving your assumptions. So it's a challenge. I think I've learned to not get too focused on the detail, because it moves so much. You need to make some good assumptions and tell people what the chances either side of that are, the sensitivities or the scenarios that could happen off the back of that. That's where I spend a lot of my time, explaining the assumption, not just saying this will happen and then guess what, it doesn't quite happen. So I think that's where we spend our time. Another big area for me has been being able to control the things you can control. So if the volatility is external and it's very hard to control that, it's trying to make sure the things that we can control are good. So a sound organization, the right people in the team, investing in the right technology, being really certain on the vision and where the company's going. Those are all controllables to a degree. So make sure those are not volatile and reliable. It just makes, when you're struck with something that you can't control, it just makes it a little easier to organize yourselves around.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, from some of your earlier experiences as well, during the COVID pandemic, there's a lot of things you can't control in there, but you are aware of what you can control and what you can try and manage as best as you can. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the play dates, these Yotto play dates that I've heard about. What are they? And I guess, who are they for and how have they evolved and what do they mean now for Yotto and those who are supporters of Yotto, or maybe those in the media who are curious about what's coming next?
Yeah, so I think it's great. And we're actually only on our second play date, actually, since we started. But they are a chance to share with predominantly our partners at the moment. They haven't been consumer facing yet, but they've been a lot around sharing with our partners where we're going and our ambitions. So the first one was launching a new product, a new hardware product. It was effectively our launch, saying this is the new version, and people got a chance to play with it and hear how it would work and get their hands on it. So that was great. And then the one we had only last month was actually a bit more software led. So it was talking about how Yotto as a platform will evolve. So using more creators to create excellent content in multiple languages, because we recognize we want to be the product that has something for everyone. But languages are a classic example of that. We can't publish every card in every language, but we can use some of our local community in Romania, for example, who will create their own content in Romanian. So we're trying to give them the tools to do that, to make your own concept that's been with Yotto from the very start, where you can record your own stories onto a blank Yotto card, bit like a cassette player of old. That's been the fundamental part of what the CTO wanted, is that flexibility. Create your own stories, put them on a card. So I use it if I travel, be able to record a story for Alfie, and then he can drop it in and hear me read the story, which, yes, I know, I could call him, I could FaceTime him, but there's something quite nice about him having that control to listen to that when he wants. So yeah, the play date was around this, sort of showing how we were opening up our tools for the community so that they could do more on Yotto. And as that grows, Yotto gets bigger, Yotto becomes better, and the whole ecosystem starts to grow. People that came to the play date were journalists, there were content creators, I had banking partners come, a lot of our shareholders came, people that provide some of our systems and tools came. And I think what it's really valuable for is I can sit on a call and I can explain to HSBC where we think we might be going. But they came to the event and they said, oh, wow, now I can see just what you're trying to achieve and how we can help. So you can do that in a couple of hours in a live meeting, in a live event, rather than trying to piecemeal this stuff together over video calls and the odd kind of in-office meeting. So it was really powerful. I've never done it with other companies, but it was really powerful to see in action.
And it's a really important part of that continuous dialogue with the banks, with supporters, with financiers, and an opportunity, I'm sure, also to get feedback from them, whether you choose to act on that or not, but to get feedback kind of en masse from all of these different stakeholders or potential stakeholders must be informative as to your operations and ultimately your product directions.
Yeah, and that's it. It's I guess all working on the same ambition, and the more people you can align around that, whether they're Yoto people or the big support network that you have, the better the outcome, in my opinion. And it's even better when they're all parents. So what you start to realize is whether you're an auditor or a banker or a lawyer, they're all parents, so you get the product. And that, I think, helps massively in explaining what we're trying to achieve.
Now, coming back to the funding part, once you've raised the funds, what's your strategy for ensuring that you're allocating those funds and that those resources as efficiently, as optimally as possible around your organization? Because there's a lot of different things, whether that's the marketing, whether that's the product development, whether that's, you know, the processes and systems that you speak about as being so important for Yoto's scale. What's your approach to that?
There tends to be it's not binary, I guess, but you know, there's growth and then there's sort of existing operations, and what do you invest in? Because it's building the plane while you're flying it. That comment always comes up. And the way I've looked at resource allocation is, again, making sure you've got a super clear strategy. So that's very easy to say, but it's very difficult to actually do, like to communicate a strategy clearly, concisely. And I wouldn't say we've got it nailed by any means, but as long as you can bring everything back to why, you know, we want to make this investment over here because it moves this part of our strategy. Weekly active families has actually been great for us because you can actually say, if we're going to invest X and Y, we want to be able to follow it through to an improvement in the weekly active families. And that connection has been really powerful in helping us prioritize where we invest. So that tends to be how we then look at investing the resources that if we've raised funds. Could it move the dial on weekly active families? The other area, I think, is the people. Like, a lot of this is around investing in the right people, making sure you bring the right people into the team, making sure they're resourced to bring the right people with them into the team. It kind of does boil down to, if you have the right group of people looking at the same North Star metric, I guess, then you'll get good investment decisions, I think, as a result of that. You always have some, what's the word? It's not conflict, but some disagreement, and you have to work through that. I think that's quite healthy to have challenge and disagreement. But if you've got good people and you're all aligned on where you're trying to go, it makes those investment decisions quite easy, in kind of a broad sense.
And I like that reflection back to that metric about the weekly active users there as well, and how that has that helps to inform your resource allocation. And of course, as Yoto has grown, then the different weightings behind that will change as well. But what's your approach though to reserve? You know, we've spoken about challenges from a few years ago. What's your strategy for resilience, or just to being able to, you know, goodness knows what's going to happen next with generative AI that's happening all around us at the moment, but being able to respond quickly to opportunities as they emerge?
As you're growing, you're always looking for sort of more fuel in the tank, so to speak. So funding through equity raises or debt raises. I think a big focus for us is making sure, or my job is to make sure, that capital structure is built appropriately, so that you're using the right funding product for the right use, so the sources and uses match. So if it's to fund working capital, So we want to buy inventory before Christmas. Then we'll find a product that fits that. And that's what HSBC has been very helpful for. They've been able to provide a trade finance facility. When you talk about resilience and having those opportunities to go after maybe a marketing opportunity, we use a different product. We've had a good experience of using a revenue financing tool where based on your revenue, you could borrow against the future earnings from customers. And that's quite a bit more expensive, as you can imagine, but it's very flexible. You can draw down on it. You can use it when you want. And that tool meant that we were able to respond to some of those marketing opportunities. If we had to, if we saw some performance in a certain channel, we could then look to invest some of that funding into that area.
Now, CFO Playbook is powered by Soldo, and it recently published its spend index for the first half of 2025. Soldo has great visibility of more than 25,000 companies' business spend around the UK and Europe. And the report offers an insightful year-on-year comparison of spend trends. And Ben, one of the insights that we saw was around investments in AI services, where spend has increased by 130%. And while we've spoken about AI and AI hype, and it's certainly been through the roof, the commentary is that businesses are now recognizing the specific areas in which AI is delivering actual value and are now beginning to double down on those areas. So, Ben, how does that resonate with you? How have you seen the use of AI evolve at Yotto, and which are the areas where you're starting to see it have the most impact?
We are seeing it as a boost for staff, first and foremost. So the ability to help teams do the day job. It's something we've picked up on quite early, and we've actually tried to lead with a decent framework for using it. So it's so easy to use. I mean, it is available on any browser, and that actually poses a risk to a business because you start to, I don't know, employees can publish information and then no one's really certain exactly how they get used. So making sure that we're adopting it responsibly with a framework to say we'll use paid services and we'll give our employees the tools. But yes, I have seen it be used a lot. I'm using it a lot myself, normally in a text manner. We've been using it for finance more and more, but I wouldn't say it's quite reliable enough yet. So to be able to say, yeah, give me some trend analysis here, there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but we're investing our time heavily in trying to make the use cases work for that. I was reflecting on this. I use it, but why do I use it? And maybe this is because I'm a CFO early in my career, but I remember before I was CFO, you'd get asked questions by your senior. Can you just tell me this? Can you just get me that? And what it resulted as an analyst of some description would be context switching. You'd constantly be trying to answer these little questions, and it might be for an email that they're writing or a meeting they're walking into. I guess I'm trying carefully not to do that. I want my team to be focused on the kind of intense. I want to sit there for, you know, half a day really trying to crack a problem. So if I interrupt them, that's not helpful for them. So I'm using AI to draw that knowledge around Yotto and answer the questions myself. You can, if it's all written down and we use Notion, you can actually go and get a lot of information just by asking an AI prompt, rather than interrupting an analyst who actually doesn't want to go and find in a spreadsheet the number that you want. They just want to crack on with the value-added stuff that I think they should be doing.
I think of my context switching brain as a bit like a slightly aging computer, and the ability to kind of command tab or alt tab through different tasks. It's just getting slower and slower for those windows to open and to flip between them. So yes, that's a really interesting take, particularly solving or addressing that context switching issue and allowing people to focus and to really get down into the trenches of the problem they're fixing, rather than having to peek their head up again just to answer smaller questions. Coming back to that spend index report from Soldo, it's also seen that businesses are increasing spend on outsourced professional services by 59%, in fact, in the UK. At Yotto, what can you tell us about your approach to outsourcing professional services and what kind of benefits or challenges you've experienced by doing that if you are on that train?
So we are keeping a lean finance team, and we do rely on our professional service network quite a lot. And I use the concept of on demand. Those services on demand are really important. I think technology has enabled that, right? People can brief and communicate with a third party really easily. And we want to lean into that because from a finance textbook perspective, it keeps your fixed costs very low. You know, you don't need, in a finance context, necessarily a tax accountant in-house. You can rely on your external professional advisor. But our third-party logistics, when we're fulfilling orders, we don't want to run warehouses ourselves. That's not our core capability. We want to use outsourced providers. So at Yoto, we really lean into using third parties. They have to be very capable, high quality, reliable, scalable, but we have to lean in on them because we can't just recruit ever more people and increase those fixed costs. Because when you're a seasonal business, it's not, you know, you can predict and forecast, but you just don't know how Christmas will go. So I need to be quite conscious of that as a finance lead and not overcommit with a fixed cost base that would make a poor Christmas impact negatively on the business. So yes, we're using them. I can see a move to using them more and more. If Uber have outsourced taxi driving, I can see that technology being used more and more to augment a company like Yoto.
And what about the challenges, though, that poses too? I mean, some would say that, yes, it does give you that flexibility, particularly in the seasonal business like you are, but also in terms of, I guess, specialism in the product, specialism in the company, having that knowledge that you would be able to build upon if it were in-house resources, there is a danger that you might lose some of that if you outsource too much.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think that's a ongoing conversation of when we believe something is core or maybe there's enough risk that we want to bring it in-house. You know, cybersecurity, for example, maybe that had been outsourced. We've now brought that in-house because it's so fundamental to what we need. There are definite risk areas where we say, no, that needs to be core to Yoto and protect it strategically. But at the same time, could you lean on a much bigger party who would actually allow you to grow internationally? I mean, that's a big area. You can't necessarily have people in every country doing or replicating all these things. You want to be able to lean on others.
From your perspective, from your role, you've got many responsibilities across finance, so across operations. What would you say is the biggest hurdle that Yoto faces on its growth curve, on its scaling up curve? Is it operational, managing those supply chains? Is it the seasonality, or is it the financial, raising investment to make sure that you are able to invest in those areas that are foundational to enable further growth? Whereabouts is it, would you say?
So I'd pick, because there's lots there, on the seasonality bit. I think it's hard. It's a physical product that's seasonal. So, you know, we'll diversify and there are reasons why we can, you know, push the business to move away from that. But fundamentally, it's a kids product. And when do kids engage with stuff? It's Christmas. So that is a challenge. And that's something that for all the things we've spoken about today, forecasting, even in fundraising, because you want to show some certainty to investors. And there will be the seasonality curve that will spook some people. They may not want to invest in businesses like that. However, the reason it's hard means it protects us from competition in some respects. So if I was a software company with only an app, I'd be quite worried that I'd have competition from all angles because within weeks, people could be competing with your software product. Because we have supply chain and it's difficult and it's seasonal, I don't believe we shouldn't be complacent, but people can spin up competitive products at the maturity level we are at and the size and scale we're at overnight or in a matter of weeks. And I think we want to make sure that while seasonality is hard and hardware is hard, it's a strategic moat for us. And that's something we want to protect. So you've got to look at it through the lens of, yes, it's hard. You know, it's hard. It is difficult. And it causes its moments where, you know, we all take a sigh and think, right, we've just got to get through this. But then if it didn't have those, I'm sure there'd be many, many more people doing it. And that would be a competitive environment that would be a lot harder.
I find that fascinating because you know, some would say, oh, hardware, could you be eaten by software? We've mentioned that already, but actually you turned that on its face and said, well, no, actually the fact that it's a hardware product, that does give us that competitive advantage because that's far more difficult, at least for other companies who are wanting to get on the same lines, to disrupt. There's so many more conversations that we could have around subscription models and all of that sort of stuff, but maybe we'll, just in the interest of time, we can park that there for now, because something we do here on CFO Play, but where we speak with a wealth of financial leaders from all around the world across many different industries, and we hear so many unique insights and nuggets of knowledge. We thought that, well, what if we had a virtual CFO playbook into which each month we submit a new entry from our guest, you know, a piece of advice that you wish you were given, or an experience that's helped to shape you, or just a tip that might help fellow finance professionals. So, Ben, my question to you is, what is your contribution to the CFO playbook?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this and trying to keep it very specific, and because it's quite a broad answer. The broad answer is read around your subject all the time. Like, that's a very broad, because I get the sense you finish school or you finish your professional exams and you think, that was a lot of learning, that's done now, and you sort of move on to learn in the day job. But actually, you're going to stop learning if you're not reading, if you're not looking at other points of view. So I would say the tip for me is read around your subject. And how I practically say that is just sign up to some great email alerts. Every morning I get an email alert from McKinsey, the consultancy, and it's just an excellent email. It always seems to be well-timed. It always seems to be relevant. It's always a topic where I'm thinking, yeah, we need to spend a bit more time on that. And it jogs you and prompts you to go and make sure you're thinking about that. I would definitely give anyone the advice to sign up to two or three great high-quality email alerts and just make sure you give yourself time to read them over a coffee. It's kind of the equivalent of getting the Financial Times through the door, right, and sitting down and having coffee. But we've sort of moved on a bit there. I don't get the print version of FT. But I do scroll through those, and you've just got to dedicate time to it, because it's easy to put it in the spam box. You've got to stay disciplined on that.
Good emails. I would also add, although it's not my entry into the playbook, it's completely yours, but I would add maybe a good podcast or two as well.
Absolutely.
Can be very helpful. Good stuff. Great entry. Thank you very much. And finally, at the end of each of our conversations here on the CFO Playbook, we like to ask a parting question. We call it our showstopper question. And in this series, we're asking our guests to give us their reflection on a phrase, and that phrase is progressive finance. So, Ben, what does progressive finance mean to you?
So progressive finance to me means asking a question, is there a better way? So something I ask the team to ask regularly is, when you're looking at a task, ask, is there a better way? Whether that's a finance process or a bit of business partnering you're doing, or just some discussion you're having with another department. Always think, is there a better way? Because that's progressive finance in my, that's us leading the agenda for change. And it's small, it's just tiny. It could be we're doing reporting like this. There will always be a better way. Technology moves 100 miles an hour. There's always going to be a simpler, faster, more reliable way of doing it. Progressive finance for me is to keep asking, is there a better way, of your team and the people you work with?
It's the definition of progress. It's moving forward, isn't it? And if you're finding a better way to do what you're doing already, then that's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I'm afraid that's all that we have time for today. Ben, thank you so much for joining us on CFO Playbook. And don't forget to join us every month here on CFO Playbook for more insights from finance leaders. And if you're looking to take what you've heard today and turn it into action, then we have created something to help you do just that. After every episode, we put together a free high-value resource that breaks down key insights from our conversation into simple, practical steps that you can take straight away. You can download it now from the show notes or head to soldo.com/Ben. That's soldo.com/BEN. But for now, from me, David McClelland, until next time, bye-bye.